Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the Abstinence No Matter What. Can you all hear me all right? Okay. Good morning. My name is Caitlin. I'm a compulsive overeater. And welcome to the Abstinence No Matter What panel. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones and other electronic devices be turned off or to silent. Make sure mine is as well. Yes, okay, good. To protect our anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing, your voice will be audible on the authorized recording, and we ask you to come up to the table after the meeting and sign a release form. C, the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. The format for this session is as follows. We will have three speakers who will share 12 minutes each, followed by questions or three open minute pitches until 5 minutes before the end of the session. The topic for this session is abstinence no matter what. Our first speaker is Rachel. Our second speaker is, well, Luis. And our third speaker is Lisa. The meeting, let's take it away, Rachel.
Do you want me sitting or standing at the podium?
Standing?
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming to this panel. My name is Rachel P. I am a compulsive overeater. Rachel. I live in Denver. I'm really glad to be here. This is my second OA birthday party. I've been in program for, it'll be 2 years in early May. So I'm somewhat of a newbie. And so the topic for this panel is abstinence no matter what. And I think for me, when I first came into program, there was confusion as far as the difference between abstinence and my food plan. And something that I really want to highlight is perfectionism, which is one of my defects, and how that was absolutely something that came up for me as I was starting program and determining what my food plan was, determining what my abstinence was. And that's something that I'm working through right now imperfectly to release and to turn over to my higher power. We all know the definition of abstinence is the act of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. So I like to think of abstinence as like the house, and the food plan and everything else is like what's inside of the house. If that metaphor works, I don't know if it does work. Or maybe like an umbrella, and everything under the umbrella is like the food plan, you know, like all of the tools and things that we do to stay abstinent, or the things that I do to stay abstinent. So the very first OA meeting I went to was, I think I was about 22 years old. I was just home from college, had just come off of a binge, and desperately Googled, like, can't stop binge eating or can't stop overeating, and OA came up. And, the name Overeaters Anonymous was like, oh, really? This? Do I have to go to this? But I did, and I heard them talk about God, and I remember I couldn't speak during that meeting. I just, my words were stuck in my throat, like this big rock stuck in my throat. And I could only cry and barely utter a word. And I remember getting back into my car and thinking, this isn't it. Because I wanted nothing to do with a higher power. But I went back out. I experimented some more. I dieted. I restricted. I lost 100 pounds from my heaviest weight. But I was still crazy up here. And so I came to see a therapist in April 2018. And she knew. She knew that I was a compulsive eater. She's a recovered compulsive overeater herself. And she sent me to OA. And, of course, I was aware of OA. I didn't want to go to OA, but I went to OA. And at that point, I had the desperation that I was willing to do whatever it took. So I started going to meetings, and my therapist had put me on a food plan. She had worked in eating disorders for years. And that's something that I think was really important, that I got my food plan from a qualified professional. Because we are all addicts, compulsive eaters. I don't want to be getting my food plan from somebody who's sick just like me, regardless of level of recovery. So that was really important, that my therapist put me on a food plan, and I diligently followed the food plan. But when I got a sponsor a few months after starting to come to meetings, we made a list of my binge foods and my behaviors, which for me include, obviously binging, restricting, fasting, obsessing. Like every time I would walk past a reflective surface, I would look at my body and try to imagine how other people were regarding me, weighing myself obsessively. So all of these different behaviors, I wrote them down, I got them on paper, and got really honest with my sponsor about what these were, what my disease looked like. I also, with my therapist, I wrote a history of my disease, kind of a narrative as far as like my relationship with food and with my body. And that was really helpful for helping me understand like what exactly my disease looks like, and therefore like what behaviors I need to abstain from and what foods I need to abstain from, with that red light list. So I got really honest with my sponsor, and bottom line, my abstinence is no binging, and I have not had a binge since May 1st, 2018, which is huge for me. Thank you. Because I couldn't put 2 weeks together. For 10 years, from the time I got to college to the time I got into program for real, I was obsessed with weight loss, and it was all I thought about, was losing weight and changing my body so that others would love me. Basically, that's the crux of this disease for me. So coming into program, it's like I commit to not doing these things. And that's, like I said, bottom line is no binging, but there are also like the food plan that I follow and the behaviors I don't do, those are so that I can stay abstinent. Those are like the tools that I can reach for, so that I maintain my abstinence. And honesty, humility, and learning from my mistakes have been so important in this journey for me over the past like year and 8 months and some change. And it's been imperfect. I've had a couple moments that I had to learn from, that I believe that my higher power brought to me so that I could learn from my mistakes. And I've always been a perfectionist. I was encouraged to get good grades. My parents paid me for good grades and for being compliant. I was a good compliant religious kid. And so being perfect so that other people would approve of me, was something that was so ingrained in me. And so, at first it was about wanting to make my therapist happy, wanting to make my sponsor happy, wanting to be perfect so that I could be loved. But I've had to kind of deconstruct that as I've worked the steps and as I've been able to be abstinent so that I can do this work. Just a few examples of ways in which I've learned on this journey as far as what abstinence is for me and what kind of behaviors I need to engage in or not engage in. Before I came into program, I committed to not drinking for a year. And my motivation was weight loss. This was during my obsessive weight loss obsessed time. So when I started in recovery, I wasn't drinking. I was sober. My year ended. With my personal trainer at the time, I made a commitment that if I did have a drink, that I would donate $250 to a certain politician that I'm not a fan of. So I won't get political here, but that was really good motivation to not drink. So I started in program, May 2nd of 2018. My year of no drinking ended August 1st of 2018. And so because my crazy disease brain was like, well, alcohol's not a problem for me. I can have a drink. I can moderate, right? And that's like my downfall when I'm like, I can moderate. So I did. I experimented with alcohol, and I was out with some coworkers for dinner out of town, and I had a drink, and it was okay. I got a little buzzed. I felt good. I didn't go crazy. I was abstinent. I didn't go crazy with food or anything like that. So I was like, all right, I can do this. But for me, I'm not a moderator. And so that's why, you know, abstinence is so important to me in more ways than one. But in August, it was like late August 2018, and I was in Detroit for work, and they had given us drink tickets. And I had and the dinner that we had wasn't what I thought it was going to be, so I didn't get my proper amounts of protein and veggies. And I was like, all right, I know I have like abstinence snacks at my hotel room, so I'll have what I can here. But I drank, and I had a tequila, and then I had another tequila, and then I had another tequila, and then we went back to the hotel bar, and I had another tequila, and I got back to my room, and I started shoving the abstinence snacks into my mouth, and I was like, whoa, what am I doing here? Like, this is not worth breaking my abstinence over. So that was certainly a learning experience. And after that night, scared the shit out of me. So I shouldn't curse here. Sorry, guys. Scared the crap out of me. So I decided after that night, I'm not drinking anymore. It's, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, but alcohol turns into sugar in the body, and this is just me, and it makes me crave food, especially when I haven't been on point with my food plan. So I'm just not going to mess with it. So that was really a learning experience. It was something that I really needed in my program. I have a couple other examples. With my program, I was drinking kombucha, sorry, specific foods, you know, which is fermented with a little bit of sugar. Is that 10 minutes left or 10 minutes done? 10 minutes done. Okay. So 2 minutes left. Okay, so real quickly, I decided that drinking kombucha would be okay, and so I was drinking kombucha, but half a kombucha in a day turned into a full kombucha in a day, turned into two kombuchas in a day, turned into, you know, I was with my boyfriend's family for a holiday, and I had like three kombuchas in one night, and I decided this is not worth it. This is not worth the crazy. So while, you know, I didn't break my abstinence, you know, after discussion with my sponsor and meditation with my higher power, it's like, this was a learning experience. And that's really the key for me, is that when I have moments like this that I'm noticing that, you know, I'm close to breaking my abstinence, or like it feels crazy, I can learn from that. And that's been so instrumental for me, that like, I can't always be perfect. Like, This is food, and there are going to be temptations everywhere. And it's not as black and white as maybe some other addictions. But when these things come up, I can learn from them, and I can get really honest with my sponsor and with my higher power. And that's the key, is that immediately I need to call up my sponsor and be like, this is what happened. I've actually had nightmares about like eating foods that are clearly off my plan, and then being like, oh, crap, I have to call my sponsor, like, in my dream. And then I wake up, and I feel guilty. Thankfully, nothing like that has happened in real life. But who knows, maybe it will. And that's okay, because I can't be perfect, and I don't need to be perfect. But ultimately the key for me is abstinence, no matter what, means that I'm going to get really honest and really vulnerable and humble here with myself, with my higher power, and with my sponsor, so that I can learn from this journey, because that's really what it is. It's not an end destination. It's not like, you know, the clouds part, my higher power strikes me abstinent, and everything's perfect from there. It's like, this is a journey, and I'm learning along the way, and that it's okay to fail, and it's okay to make mistakes, and that's how I get better. And my higher power, I think, is guiding me along the way, and I'm just really grateful to be in this program, to be abstinent for today, and that I pass.
Oh, sorry. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name's Lewis. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, Denise. Hi. You know, I'm really happy to be here and, you know, see friendly faces that I love and who were here in the beginning when I first walked in the doors, broken, dead inside. I remember sitting January and around New Year's, the holidays are very important for me. Because, you know, it was the New Year's Eve. I was sitting at home in my apartment, and it was really the first, and thank God the last time, hopefully, that I wanted to die, right? I was done with life. I was 100 pounds overweight, and I was sitting in my apartment, and all I wanted to do was die. I go through the phone list on my phone, the contact list. You know, you look at it and you came up with every excuse why you couldn't call this person. You know, they don't want to hear from me. They're busy. They're partying. All the while I'm ignoring calls that are coming in. Because that's what the disease tells me, right? You know, I'm supposed to be alone. After that, I went into a therapist because, yeah, that's worked before. And go see the therapist. And I'm like, look, I don't like the group stuff. Maybe, you know, we can get together and, you know, we keep this in-house and just figure this out, you know. And, you know, after a few sessions, she says, Lewis, you're an addict with food. And it was like getting punched right in the chest. It felt exactly like that. And I started bawling in the office, like the really ugly cry that you get. And I didn't want to believe it. Because I kept thinking, wait a minute, no, I don't drink anymore. Obviously, I don't over-exercise because I'm 320 pounds. I don't do that anymore. What's the problem? It's my last vice. It's the last thing I have. Don't take food away from me. And she said, are you willing to go to something called Overeaters Anonymous? I said, no. But after two more weeks of asking me, I was ready. I was desperate enough because nothing else. Every single good idea that I have had led me back to the food, had led me back to the isolation, you know, had led me back to the loneliness. You know, you could be literally in a crowded room full of people and still be isolated. I was so good at that, you know, really good. I got the face on, everything's great. Yeah, fantastic. I don't know, but how the hell are you? And I got away with that for a long time. But that catches up to you. Finally, I relented. I called I live in Sherman Oaks here in California. And I called the office. And I said, look, I'm a guy. You know, where should I go? They said, oh, the meeting in Studio City is great. Sunday morning, great. What time? 7:30 a.m. Ugh. What? I'm sleeping. Even then, I'm at, like, maybe Trader Joe's. That's a good time to go because it's not as crowded. And but I was desperate. Again, I was desperate. I had no other option because everything else I had tried did not work. And I went and I sat there with a big sign over the speaker that said, God is love. And I'm like, ah, crap. I don't belong here. Looking at the people like, I don't belong here. The speaker ended up being an anorexic, and I'm just like, I really don't belong here. And then she started talking. And then it started to really hit me. Her story was mine, right? Maybe it manifested itself in a different way, but the craziness, the insanity around life and food was 100% the same. And right there, I hated it because I'm like, crap, I belong here. Crap, these are my freaking people. Crap, why do they want to hug me? Stop it. And, you know, it took some time. Some guys came up to me and said, Lewis, we meet up for breakfast afterwards. Would you like to come? I said, no. And they said, think about it. I said, all right, I'll get money from the ATM and then I'll decide. And I sat there at that ATM for like 15, 20 minutes before I decided to go to that breakfast. I hadn't shared at the meeting, so I hadn't really talked yet, right? And these guys were very pointed. Yeah, what do you do with food? What do you do? I'm like, you don't understand. Like, I throw it out and then I get it. Yeah, of course. No, you don't understand. Like, I shove the thing into the thing and then I eat the thing and they're like, well, yeah, why wouldn't you? And it was the first time, the very first time where you know, A, I was willing to admit that I ate this way to any single human being. Ever. You know, the drinking stories, you're just like, these are fun, you know, and whatever. And but this is the kind of crap where I did by myself. This was my secret. And in my mind, I was the only one who did it. No one else did this. No one else would go to the grocery store, pay for the groceries with a credit card, and then pay for the stuff I wanted to binge on in cash so the wife doesn't look at the receipt. you know? This is the kind of stuff where I would binge out at home before, you know, before I knew someone was mad at me, you know, so I could steal myself, numb myself. I spent all the time just trying to get through things, not living life. So to get to the abstinence no matter what part, I was born with some medical issues, to put it lightly. And I was constantly obsessed with how my body looked in front of people, to you. How do I look? Do I need to shift this? What if I stand this way? Blah, 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 blah. And because of those medical issues, I grew to resent God. In my head, I was like, I'm alive despite God, not because of him. And coming in the program, very reluctantly working the steps. I don't do it once. I'm one of those wackos that continually does it. I'm on my third go around because guess what? There's always something more to dig up. There's always something more. I've always got a new resentment. I've always got something that I maybe didn't find before. You know, maybe they don't seem as big as maybe that first go around, but they're still important to me. And I need that. I've taken myself out of the decision making with food. I have a sponsor. I allow myself to be sponsored. I have willingness. I get to give away what I have, what's been given to me. I have sponsees. I love them. They keep me in it. I don't know if you guys were at the opening thing last night, but Susan mentioned that I just had a kidney transplant. And it's my second one. The first one I did, not an abstinence, right? Whacked out of my mind. First thing they tell you is like, don't stay around, get away from kids, don't go to the gym. You know, within getting out of the hospital, I'm like walking the treadmill. A friend of mine saw me, thank God. It's like, what the hell is wrong with you? Get the hell out of here. This time was different. This time I was in the middle of the herd, right? This time I let people know what was happening. You know, I kept my sponsor calls. I kept my sponsee calls. I couldn't go to the meeting. I had 37 staples down my abdomen, but you know what? I'm not going to miss a meeting. People were willing to come to me. People would come see me. I could do phone meetings, live phone meetings, because I need to hear someone in real time that's having the same experience that I am, right? We need to know that we're all in the same boat. And here's the thing. I do all that stuff. I commit my food. I don't make food decisions. I send pictures of my food. I get pictures of food from my sponsees. And I cannot lower those standards. I cannot. This is a horrible way to die from this disease. The transplant stuff, the dialysis before the transplant, that's the real killer, right? Because there, you know, the transplant, it's an experience. I was on dialysis for a year and a half, and that gives me plenty of time to build the story. That gives me plenty of time to make the excuse. That gives me plenty of time to think, no, you don't understand, I'm special. Yes, we're all so freaking special, right? You know, you don't understand, but this is my circumstance. But giving into those thoughts will kill me. I've seen people die from this disease, and sometimes I think to myself, oh yeah, Lewis, that's a good idea to do. I've seen people die at 600 pounds. We were seeing a guy, we were bringing him meetings. He was, you know, yeah, 600 pounds. We were working with him, lost about 98, and he got worse, and they had to put him in a different hospital. He stopped slowly working his program. He managed to put on not just what he lost, but then some. You know, these are the lengths we'll go to, right, to feed our disease. He's bedridden, couldn't wear clothes, and still managed to binge. I've got that kind of dedication. At my top weight, I was more than halfway to where he was. And you know what? If I lower the standards today, I could be there tomorrow. Easily. I have it in me, you know? Thank God today I have freedom from the food obsession. You know, do I have freedom from crazy thoughts? No. Do I have freedom from not wanting to isolate? No. But that's why I do the work. That's why I make the calls. That's why I take the calls. You know, all the service I did last year, the crap I did yesterday, writing all that doesn't help me today. I need to renew that commitment to myself, to my higher power, to the fellowship every single day. I only have to get to bedtime, abstinently. There have been moments where I've had to do it by the hour. Hey, it's me. I didn't binge yet. Call me at 2. Okay. Because that's what it takes, you know? And so all that to say, I'm glad you're all here. And if you're struggling today, I hope you find willingness and desperation enough to get sponsored. Read the big book. Read a page. I don't care what page. If you don't relate to that page, read another one. Whatever. Keep reading one until one sticks. And then just be willing to do the work. Thanks.
Hi, you guys. There's a few seats up front. If anybody wants to sit down, there's one in there. Just come on in. Hold it up here. Okay. Hi, Lisa, compulsive overeater.
Hi,
you guys. And thank you guys so much for your shares, because I feel like I already got 24 minutes of sharing in. They were like reading my diary. For those who don't know me, I have 24 years in program. I came in October 17th, 1995. You may not think of October 17th as being remotely significant. For me, it wasn't until I came in that I realized, oh, abstinence means I don't binge, but it's Halloween in a week and a half. I need to come back. That was my day, you know? Other people have New Year's. No, I have Halloween because then I can binge publicly the way I do privately, and people, that's just normal. But unfortunately, I got a sponsor really quickly. I didn't ask for her. She offered. I would never have picked her because she was a human being, and I was a perfectionist, and so clearly that wasn't going to work because I wasn't happy being a human being. That wasn't working for me. So I said, okay. I thought I would have her for a few weeks. I had her for the first, I think, 7 years of my program. She was a big book thumper, and she did not need to, she was not my shrink. She was not my mom. She was not my buddy. She worked me. And she had me work the steps. When I called, if I had a problem, oh, I'm gonna run with a guy. It was like, okay, what step is that? Go work it. Like, she did not need to hear it, which is what I needed. I'd already gone to a shrink for a year and a half, had no idea I had an eating disorder, which I'd had my whole life. It was one day that I said, oh, my a relative had just been diagnosed with anorexia, and I was like, oh, that's so weird. And, you know, I just saw her, and I had no idea. And my whole family does weird stuff with food, and I ate a lot last night, and I just kept eating. Well, anyway, and then I started talking about something else, and she's like, but, what? And I was like, yeah, I eat a lot at night, after dinner, late at night. And she's like, have you ever heard about Overeaters Anonymous? And I immediately was like, why, what, you know? I was very functional. I grew up in a very, you had to look okay kind of house. Like, you could do whatever you want with the food, but you better look okay. So there was a lot of, I binged late at night, and then I skipped meals to make up for it. And so I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, go try 6 meetings. I was paying her, so I thought, okay. So I went, and the first meeting, I was like, oh, all y'all are crazy, and I can fix all of you right now. Like, if you had let me, I would have solved every single problem. And then one person was, like, bawling the whole time, and I was like, you know. And then, like, this is not, I didn't cry in front of anybody, ever. And she, you know, I thought, this is, you know, you've got to be crazy to cry in front of someone you don't even know, because she didn't know me. And then when it went around and people were like, you know, who can sponsor, and she raised her hand, I was like, Jesus, you know, like, she's going to be a lot of help to anyone. And she became an early friend in program, because after I got over myself, I realized, like, showing emotion, human emotion, is actually natural. Another friend from that meeting, because I went to the second meeting and I heard my journal, or, you know, my mail was being read, and it was like, okay, I belong. But I just remember an early friend I called. This was, a couple days into program. I had just gotten my sponsor. I and I started being honest with another human being about my food. Didn't have a God concept then, but once I started being honest, the food cleaned up. I had been dishonest for 31 years. I was tired of it, or 30 and a half, whatever. I was tired of it. So I remember this one day, I don't know what was the reason, but I was reaching for something in the freezer that was not a good idea. And I saw, and because my abstinence is 3 meals a day, I don't skip, I don't binge, I don't eat over, I don't eat after 10, unless I'm like up working until, you know, some insane hour. And it's sane and guilt-free. And I know at this point when it doesn't feel sane and guilt-free, because 15 minutes later, I'm still thinking about it. So anyway, this food was okay to be in there, but not the way I wanted it, you know? And I saw my hand, and I had a second and a half. And in that second and a half of awareness, I reached for the phone. I called this friend. I was like, I'm about to eat it. And she started laughing at me. And I was like, screw you. Like, what? But it was the first chink in my armor. Like, oh, I don't need to take myself so damn seriously. Like I said, I came in thinking I could solve everything. I was such a know-it-all. I had not solved my going to sleep every night feeling miserable and waking up in the morning saying I wasn't going to do it again and then going to sleep and having done it again, that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. So I took that. And I took myself so seriously. And giving that lightness, having that lightness, was a revelation to me. And so she was, you know, she was an early friend in program after I got over being all embarrassed that she was laughing at me. Because she was laughing with me. I didn't get it. Like, she knew what that was about. She knew what that second was about. Second and a half. So I was abstinent that first Halloween and every Halloween since, and I wasn't white knuckling. I was actually present for whatever the event was, which I had never done before. I realized watching people, and this is at parties too, like I realized the way I would go to a party, I would go to the food and eat for 30 minutes and then hang out and be comfortable. And I saw when I stopped doing it, the way people did that with drinking, which hadn't been my substance. People drank until they felt socially comfortable. It's like, oh, so I just have to sit in this discomfort for 20 minutes, and then I'll have a good time. And for me, one of my favorite lines in the Big Book is like, we can go, and I'm going to butcher it, is like, we can go to whoopee parties if we're in fit spiritual condition. So for me, like, that was it. That was like, I can go anywhere as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition and not worry about the food. But if I am invited to something, and during the holidays there's a lot of invitations, a lot of them are work invitations, and I think, am I going to be of service? Is there a way I can go and show up and like talk to people that I want to meet or see or whatever, network, thank you. If not, I don't have a reason to be there. If I can't be of service, if I'm just going because I think there's going to be something good to eat, I can't go there. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. My first birthday, I crashed my car. I was abstinent. 6 months after that, my brother was diagnosed with cancer. I stayed abstinent. A year after that, he died. I spent as much time with him as I could during that year. I was with him by his side when he died. I stayed abstinent. My parents did not. My parents had no abstinence ever. And I mean, not to, you know. But if I had tried to get everybody abstinent when I came in because I was a know-it-all. I mean, I tried very little, but they all thought I was some kind of dilettante doing some weird L.A. thing. I live in L.A. And my mom, that was the closest she ever came to slapping me. I could tell when I was like, she was like, I'm so worried about your brother, another brother who was overweight. And I was like, well, why don't you try? Oh, no, no. So anyway, when my brother got sick and when he died, I was jealous of them for having the food. So the idea that, like, taking that away from my parents, losing their son, like, I'm so glad that I'm not in charge and that they had their own path. Because I was glad they had that. And I was glad I didn't, because I could walk through it abstinently. I was taking care of things that, you know, I was handling a lot of stuff that they couldn't handle. and it sucked, and I walked through it. Now, that said, the easy stuff, the stuff like the mundane stuff, is harder for me. I just went last week to a really good friend's birthday. He decided to do it at a buffet, an all-you-can-eat buffet, a fancy one. Doesn't work for me. I learned this 24 and a half, whatever, years in. I didn't break my abstinence, but it was not the place for me to be. They were going back and back and back. I mean, they had, like, trained for it, these two other friends. He hadn't eaten all day. You know, I had had breakfast and lunch, and I was like, you know, after one plate, there was nothing to, you know, like, so so I had a few bites too much, and I had, and as I shared in my meeting yesterday, I had gotten up and walked around the hotel during one of their courses. Like, I had gone to the bathroom. I'd done all sorts of things. Never during that time did I think, oh, maybe call your sponsor, you know, or maybe just get out. Like, I kept coming back to sit with them, and it was just not working for me. And I called my sponsor afterwards, and she was like, yeah, that doesn't work for me. Buffets don't work for me. And I was like, oh, right. So, like, I've been, this last year, I've been through, forced to move by people who bought my building. A week and a half later, getting hit by, in my car by a hit and run. And losing my mom after an illness that was taking her away from me bit by bit. And I was abstinent the whole time, no matter what. And like, even when she died, we sat Shiva, which is the thing that, you know, we had a lot of food in the house, a lot of food. And I was abstinent. And of course, somewhere in the back of my head, there's a voice that's like, it's okay to eat. Like, that disease is still there, but it's not okay to eat. It's never okay to eat, because then I'm in that feeling for that much longer until I get, you know, until I get sane again. So I knew I just had to do it no matter what. I called my sponsor a lot. And here's something I do during the holidays. During the rest of the year, the moderation works just fine. For me, during the holidays, when there's dessert options at every freaking meal, apparently, thank you, doesn't work for me. It's too many options. It freaks me out. I want to try everything. And so I call my sponsor, and I'm of an age where it's before, you know, texting. So I call. I don't text her, because that's so much easier to just be like, oh, I'm going to have this. I call her if I'm going to have dessert. So then I have to leave whatever place I'm in. It has to be so conscious to have some privacy to call and say, I'm going to have this thing. So it just cuts it way down. And when I do say, you know, when I do call and I do have it, she's like, enjoy every bite. You know, this isn't about punishing myself. This is about doing it sanely. So and one year I could tell I wasn't feeling safe and secure in my own abstinence enough to let that go. So one year, like, I did it through the holidays and for like 9 months after. She couldn't have cared less. And this is calls, like I said, not texts. It's intrusive. She didn't care. And that's like incredible service to me. And I hopefully, you know, carry that on to my sponsees. I have 1 minute left, so I'm trying to think of what else I do no matter what. I don't skip meals no matter what. After that buffet where I had a little bit too much and felt like icky about the whole evening, the whole situation, the next morning, that voice was there. Well, if you don't have dessert, I mean, if you don't have breakfast, it's not a big deal. Yeah, it is. It's not a big deal today, but it's going to be a big deal eventually. So that's it for me. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. The meeting is now open for questions or 3-minute pitches. And just a reminder, please sign the release form at the podium prior to speaking. We ask that you limit your share to 3 minutes and confine your share to experience, strength, and hope on the topic discussed today. This session ends at 10:15 a.m.
She hadn't heard the definition of abstinence in any of our shares, so she had missed Rachel saying it.
Sure.
Yeah.
The OA definition of abstinence, which is read at the beginning, or should I think is read at the beginning of every meeting, is the act of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Yes.
My name's Bill. I'm a food addict and compulsive overeater. I'm from Las Vegas and Singapore, and I spend most of my time in Singapore with my Chinese wife. But I did come over for here because I really needed a jump start on my program. You know, when I get over 190 pounds, I start getting in panic mode, and I really have to work this program. And abstinence, no matter what, is critically important. And the first program I was in was the mother program. After a couple of coma drinking incidents, almost killed me in 87 and 88. Got into this program around 89, gave a brochure to a cousin who was living in New York who was 450 pounds, and she had no interest in it and dropped dead a year later at 450 pounds. So you do die from being overweight. And when I was living in Vegas in the 70s and half through the 80s, I used to go and see the Carpenters, and everyone knows Karen Carpenter died from anorexia. So you die from that. And of the three kids I have with my Chinese wife, who cannot drink, she is physically allergic to alcohol. One is bulimic, daughter is bulimic, classic bulimic. Another daughter is almost as heavy as I am. My son is a gamer that I have with that wife. And so everyone's got addictions. And I have to pray every morning that I don't indulge any of my addictions, that I try and be nice. And I know that the problem is Bill. It's not my relatives, not my wife, not my kids, not my ex-wives. It's not what I read in the newspapers. And I tell newcomers, don't read the newspapers. And you know I'm the problem, and I have to deal with it. And when I do that, I can have emotional sobriety, emotional abstinence, and I can be at peace with myself. And that's what this whole deal is. Eventually, you want to be comfortable in your own skin, because we only have the one skin we have. If I trash my body and my skin, I'm going to die early. And I'm 84 years of age, so... And my alcoholic mother sent me to see The Lost Weekend in 1945. So I've been exposed to this stuff, but nothing registered until I picked up the addictions. Thank you.
Yes. There you go.
Okay.
So the question is, what do you do when you are faced with the refrigerator and you're, to paraphrase, feeling powerless? What's your go-to to stay out of the disease?
Hi, that's such a great question. For me, my favorite prayer is help. And that has saved me so many times. I mean, if I want to get fancy, I say, God help me. But that's three times longer. So I pray. I get the literature. I start writing, which I admit is my last resort. I write all day for a living. I hate writing. I will go outside and I have like a little, I share a patio and I will like garden. I will like play with the plants. I go for a walk. Anything. It depends. One of the first things my sponsor had me do was list 10 things that give me comfort that don't involve food. Because that's what we're taking away, that comfort that then has boomeranged on us and is killing us. So I could not come up with 10 things when I first came in. Now I have dozens. But I always have my sponsees do that first thing. They also hate the homework because it's really hard to, and that don't involve spending money or any other of the whack-a-moles, you know? And for me, one of those is watching TV mindlessly, so that's not on there either. So it's, you know, engaging behavior. It could be doing a crossword puzzle, reading, any number of things. But for me, honestly, my first one, and which I forgot to do the other night, although I did, thank God, remember, like, oh, I can get up and walk around because it's beautiful. Like, it had this beautiful view, and I could just, they didn't notice. They kept going back and back. Like, I could just go and walk around the building. So taking myself away from where it is really key as well. Is that helpful? Okay.
Yeah, I'll answer quickly. Rachel, compulsive reader. Something I like to do with each of my sponsees is have them write like a really easily accessible short list of tools that they can reach for when the food is calling, you know, because the food is going to call when we're in that initial physical stage of recovery. You know, it's physical, mental, and then spiritual, and it's going to feel like a diet. It's going to feel like white knuckling until we work the steps and then until we have the spiritual awakening. So whether it's a note card or a list on the fridge or the initial screen on your phone if you need to, if you're not worried about other people seeing that, whatever is the most accessible resource for you to write out a list of tools that you can reach for when you want to reach for the food. So, you know, obviously we know the tools of recovery. So phone calls is awesome. Just sending a text alone can be great because even if that person doesn't respond right away, it's like just putting it out there can be helpful. Literature, prayer, meditation, whatever it is. So just make a short list as far as things that are effective for you that you think could be effective for you and just make that really accessible.
Hi, me again. So the things that I've done when the food's calling me, first off, it's got to be real-time honesty, right? Rigorous real-time honesty. So as the day is going, even if it's something as simple and bothersome to me as that I hate small salads, I will text that out, you know, and I will let people know. Seriously, I've gotten texts where it's just like, I hate my salad, you know? But that, you know, it gets me out of my own head. At least I'm communicating with someone. You know, third step prayer is on repeat in my head the entire day. If not the whole thing, just God relieve me of the bondage of self. Because I am all about me all day, every day. The other thing is when I'm bothered, when it's about me, I need to help someone else. So where can I be of service? Where can I be of service right then and there? Whether it's, you know, helping the lady across the hall move something, whether it's calling someone, hey, how are you doing? You know, I need to get out of my own way and into helping someone else. Probably the best recipe. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, thanks so much. Thank you guys for the presenters for your service. Much appreciated. I'm Larry Kay. I'm a recovered compulsive reader. I'm from Chicago. Hi, guys. Chicago, right. It's cold in Chicago. I talked to my daughter. There's a snowstorm going on in Chicago, so I'm glad to be here for that reason. I can only hold my breath underwater for not very long in an unrecovered state. Eventually, I'm going to come up for air. And when I do come up for air, I'm not going to eat in front of you. I'm going to go up to my room because there's someone in this room right now that has food up in the room. The reason I know that was me at a convention a number of years ago, and I swore that I would not pick up that food, and I meant it when I said that. And I did, of course, because I could not hold my breath underwater in an unrecovered state. The tools for me, and I speak with love and compassion for everyone else. I do not speak for OA. Of course, none of us do, right? OA is a big tent of people with lots of different variations. But in my experience, because I spent many years in OA dabbling in the steps, using tools as though they were the practical program of spiritual action that would bring me to a recovered state. They were never designed that way by our founders. The tools were merely designed as handrails in which to support you while you have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. We need to work the steps quickly. Why is that? Because if you are a true compulsive overeater, you cannot hold your breath underwater for very long. Eventually, you're going to come up, you're going to pick up that food, and I think in OA, thank you, I think in OA, we are leading meetings, we're doing a lot of things, a lot of lovely, well-intentioned, nurturing, beautiful people that are drunk. They are drunk. They are still beautiful, lovely people, but they are drunk. And they're sponsoring other people that it's okay to moderate and be drunk, who are sponsoring other people, and so it goes. And the whole practical program of spiritual action gets watered down, and people go on for decades and do not have an effective spiritual awakening in which to eradicate the obsession. The only reason the obsession has been eradicated for me is by the grace of God and these steps that have driven out the obsession, and that's why I'm not 100 pounds heavier anymore, and I do have emotional sobriety. My mom has cancer. My dad passed away. Life still happens, but I am abstinent peacefully in the midst of calamity, hold your ears, and the shitstorm that occasionally visits me. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
My name's Michelle. I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. So when I came into OA, I came into OA in November 2017 and was able to lose 110 pounds. I'm very, very grateful. But I was having some body dysmorphia issues, and I wanted to go on the maintenance plan, and I added in an extra carbohydrate, which is part of the maintenance plan. But because of, I have polycystic ovarian syndrome, insulin resistance, I gained about 20 pounds back and then another 10 from health issues. So I have started losing again, thankfully, last month and a half. And I was really working on my spiritual and emotional program during the last couple months because I'm like, okay, well, it's not about you controlling the weight loss. It's up, you know, it's in God's timing and you're trying to put the control on yourself. But I guess my main question is, a lot of times when I start feeling sorry for myself that it's so hard to lose weight, and obviously I had to take that extra carb out, I go through these, like, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. It's not fair because I'm eating healthier than anyone I know, or it's not fair that other people are healthy and able to run marathons. Like, my best friend, she runs marathons, has a kid, works full time, and can eat whatever she wants. And, I mean, that's great for her, but meanwhile, my husband and I aren't able to have kids, and I'm disabled, and and instead of being grateful for all the weight I've lost and preventing health issues down the road, and I start feeling sorry for myself. And when I get into the it's not fair, it's like, and then I feel like I should be able to have that second carbohydrate serving a day. Like, I should be able to eat more than 20 grams of carbs. And I don't, and that is a trigger for me. And I just wonder what your advice is for abstinent no matter what. When you start looking at, first, I know comparison is the theft of joy, so I cannot look at my friend who is able to run marathons because she's not disabled and do all these things. But at the same time, it's like in that moment, I'm like, it's not fair. I should be able to just have this extra carb serving, and I know I can't, and I know life's not fair, and there's a lot of blessings I have that other people don't, but how do you contradict that moment? I guess is my question.
Thank you for your question, Michelle. I'm right with you. I have an autoimmune disease. I have hypothyroidism. I also have another autoimmune disease called HS, which when I was in my disease, I had these horrible cysts on my underarms. So autoimmune disease is hard. It's hard to see other people eating with impunity. But, you know, it comes down to step one for me. Like, I am one of the maybe 10% of people who, you know, I have that allergy that the big book describes, that the doctor's opinion describes, that when I have one bite of these foods, my brain lights up and my body goes crazy and I just want more and more and it's never enough. And so acceptance has been really huge for me. And I've certainly gone through periods of time where, you know, I want to be able to eat the way that everybody else eats, but I come back to step one and ask my higher power, you know, help me to understand, like, I have this allergy and this is my treatment. The steps are my treatment.
Another great question. Can't find her. For me, I came in thinking if I was good, meaning abstinent, and did everything my sponsor told me to do. This wasn't conscious, but I realized when I found out my brother was sick, but I've been good. Like, that was in there. It was like, but I've done everything I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I'm being of service now. I'm being a good person. And I realized that subconsciously I thought that meant, so then nothing bad is going to ever happen to me or anybody I love ever. Like, that is not reality. That was my fantasy brain, and it came crashing down. And then I realized, oh right, the entire world, like, nothing is fair. Nothing in the world is fair. It is, and it's a tough question because it's like kind of the mystery of the world, the universe, and religion and higher power, like everything. Those are the questions that everybody tackles. That are like, you know, how can this happen? How can blank happen when I've been a good person? It is so not a merit system. You know, my father's 97. He would have traded places with my brother in a second. All that said, definitely acceptance is the key to all my problems today, and recognition that since life is chaos, thank you, and unfair and also beautiful, all I can do is do my best to be a good person and to be kind and not add to the chaos, because I did a lot of adding to the chaos in my disease. So all I can do every day, very imperfectly, is just do my best to not make anybody's life worse. And then after that, try to make everybody's life better in any way possible. Smiling at someone, holding a door, whatever it is, returning a cart. And yeah, compare and despair. It's just, it will make me crazy. And I'm already crazy. I don't need any more of that. So it's steps one, two, and three as often as I need to do them.
Hold that clap. So for me, I love that there's a straight line, right? You know, acceptance for me comes from knowing that I'm cared for by my higher power, knowing that, you know, I'm going to be taken care of, right? That's where the comfort comes from for me, right? Without my higher power, I am in constant discomfort, right? Irritable, discontent, all that stuff. I am that times 10, right? So when I feel comforted by my higher power, but that only comes, right, through working the steps, right, having that spiritual awakening, you know, having that through the steps, right? But then even that comes from the willingness, right? And then from that, just and the patience. You're right where you're supposed to be, you know? All you need, there's nothing to know in this program. You don't have to know nothing. You don't have to know the quotes. You don't have to know anything, right? Just willingness. Just say yes, right? So when you have that starting line, right, you can deal with life on life's terms, you know. And though that straight line for me has brought joy to my life, right? I could sit there and, like I said, sit through dialysis. All of a sudden, I found time for things, right? If it's life and death, without dialysis, I looked it up because I'm a morbid bastard. I looked it up. Without dialysis, I could live for 10 days without dialysis, right? I could do that, 10 days. And for me, I treat this disease of compulsive overeating as much more serious business than the dialysis, right? That's because at least that, I know I'll die in 10 days. You know, this I'll die much, much slower, much, much more brutal, you know, and probably much more painful. So willingness, the steps, finding a higher power, and then the acceptance comes. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Diane, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And this is my birthday party to myself. I celebrated 30 years on Thursday. My abstinence, I was a compulsive dieter, compulsive eater, struggling with the weight, but didn't want to gain too much back. I'd gained and lost 40 pounds out of high school, and I thought about food all the time. So my abstinence was 3 meals a day with nothing in between. And then about 16 years down the road, I noticed a little problem with certain foods, i.e. sugar and a couple other binge foods. I put them on my trigger list. I committed at my step study just for this week instead of just for today. I said, I am not going to have any of this. I did it over and over and over, and I never looked back. So I've been abstinent from those foods for 18 years now. And but I think it's important that we let our abstinence evolve. And for those who are suffering in this room who have not yet found abstinence or not feel that they're abstinence at this moment, you know, 3 meals and 2 optional snacks works. The snacks didn't do it for me because it kept the compulsion alive and could trigger me to that night eating I used to do. But it's a very individual program, and you do not have to feel bad if your idea of what works for you is different from what works for me. We're not here to shame you. We're not restrictive. We just want this to be a way of life, a healthy way of life, where everything is in perspective and we're not obsessed with food. And I like that saying. I think it comes from AA, actually, abstinence just for today, even if your ass falls off. Abstinence is the number one thing. I don't care whose birthday it is. I've lost both my parents. I've lost different people in my life through abstinence. That's not a good enough reason to overeat. But we can make adjustments. We can get good sponsors who hold us accountable. And we can say, you know what, this got really weird tonight. And then they can bless us and say, you know, maybe we need to back off that last snack. Or maybe we need to add you a snack at 3 p.m. And it's a flexible program, but it's individual and it's very succinct to ourselves. And we have to forgive ourselves for any of our past problems with food. I was very shame-based. And I just love myself through it. My sponsors love myself through it. And this is an incredible program, and I'm so grateful you're all here tonight. Thank you. Or today.
That is all the time we have for sharing. It is now time to close this session. Let's thank our speakers and all who have done service for the session. If you have enjoyed this workshop, we encourage you to stop by the tapes table. This has media in big blue letters on it, to order copies of the session and other sessions. All the workshops and the main speaker events are being recorded and are available on CD, electronic download, or on a USB drive. Please join hands as we close with the Serenity Prayer or the Third Step Prayer. Let's do the Third Step Prayer.
God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Amen. Keep me back in the word.
And if you spoke up, please remember to sign the waiver.